The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held at Waits Lake Bible Camp near Valley, Washington, on October 19 and 20, 2023.
So I don't know what you were hoping for when you came to a failure class. Initially, when I heard this, or when I read this, I thought it was going to be success in failure. And maybe there's a difference between survival and success. I think there's a little bit of a difference. So I'm just gonna kind of tell you what direction we're gonna go here. I want to just discuss what failure is. So the who and how and the levels of failure, escalation of failure, because everybody has different opinions of what that is, what failure actually is. We want to look at when failure, maybe success in other ways, may look like failure, but it's actually success in other ways. I want to look at a couple of leadership failures, David and Saul in the Bible. I want to look at Boeing. There's a story of Boeing 737 MAX aircraft, which maybe all of you have flown in. And that was a major issue, and I want to talk about that and some of those responses. And then I want to just talk about from that a little bit, some negative reactions to failure and then some positive reactions to failure. So a couple stories to start. About a month ago, October 1, Richard McSpadden was the passenger of a small airplane that took off, a single engine airplane took off from a small airport. And they were just off the ground, and something failed, whether it was the engine or they're not even sure yet. The pilot tried to turn the plane around, but at low altitude, there's not enough room, and they ended up crashing. And Richard and the pilot were killed. Now, the interesting thing is that Richard was, he had been a fighter pilot. He had been a demonstration team pilot, so air shows. He had been a flight instructor. He was the vice president of a flight safety organization. Now, one thing they teach over and over is that when you have a failure on takeoff, is do not turn around unless you have very sufficient altitude. You just go straight ahead, find a suitable landing field, something that you think you can survive. This man, it actually really shook the aviation world because this man shouldn't have died that way because they shouldn't have tried to turn around when they did. They both died. Another story, back in 2009, you may have heard of this one. Chelsea Sullenberger and his co-pilot, Jeffrey Skiles, were just taking off out of LaGuardia Airport by New York City. And they were only at about 2,800 feet with their A320 with 155 passengers, and they flew through a flock of geese, and a goose hitting a turbofan engine doesn't really work very well. Parts and pieces fly, and the goose obviously dies. The engines stop, so this plane had to, the pilot had to decide what to do. Ahead of him is city, behind him is the airport, there's a river there, and he had a few seconds to make that decision. So they gave him he talked to air traffic control. He says, no, I don't think I can make it back. And he decided, I'm going to just land in the river. And that plane, he touched down beautifully. The wings were not full of fuel, so they had air in them. So the plane actually floated for a while. Everyone got out. No one was hurt. Well, there was a few injuries, but everyone survived. Would you call this success? There was failure. One story there was dramatic failure and catastrophe. The other one, there was failure as well, but there was success. And I think we can learn from this. You know, I don't want to say one pilot was horrible and the other one was great. There was also some luck and things I think involved with that as well, but also good decision making. And the decision that each of those pilots made had to be made before they took off. They didn't have enough time in that moment to really think it through and make a perfect decision for a good outcome. Especially when you're in a small plane taking off, there's just no time. Sometimes we're in a situation where things go wrong quickly and we don't really have the time to think through how we're going to respond, how we're going to react. And it can be a highly emotional time when there's failure around us or we realize we're in a failure situation. Today we want to talk about how to respond because we want to, at that moment, respond right. So, like I said earlier, we want to discuss success in failure. So who of you likes to talk about your own failures? Is that, do you have a raise of hands? Do you like to talk about your own? No, how about talking about other people's failures? Do you like talking about other people's failures? It's maybe a little bit easier. Sometimes it might even be enjoyable to our lower side or whatever.
Well, that brings back the question. I'm sorry for interrupting. What do you call failure?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that some more. So hold that question. So back to talking about other people's mistakes. I'm just going to read from 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The Bible actually says, learn from other people's mistakes. Learn from other people's failures. Because, let me read here. 1 Corinthians 10, 6. Now these things, this is talking about the children of Israel, were our examples to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, neither be idolaters, and so on and so on. Neither murmur ye, neither tempt Christ. All of these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. So that to me says, definitely talk about other people's mistakes, not in a negative way, but in a way that you can learn from. There's not a person, not a successful person out there that hasn't went through some kind of failure and possibly some very dark failures. You don't always know those kinds of things when you look at someone. Wise decisions come from experience, and experience often comes from bad choices. So that's kind of a circular thing. I have not really been involved in huge situational failure. And I hope you weren't expecting that since I have been, I could come up with all the answers. But I think we don't have to fail catastrophically to understand some of the basic principles of responding well. When you learn to deal with some of the small problems in your life, then you also learn how to deal with the big problems as well. So I do want to hear from you as we go through this to learn what we can. Okay, let's talk about what failure is. I'm just going to go through this thinking about who fails, how we can fail, different levels of failure, maybe how failure can escalate. And if you think I'm wrong in any of these things, by all means, let's talk about it. So since we're talking about school, who can fail in school? Let's just think through.
Well, everyone.
Everyone.
Students can fail their grade. Teachers can fail to make
the students. Parents can fail the students and the kids.
Okay, parents, teachers.
You can point fingers at everyone.
And above the parents, we can have ministry failing. That can filter down. And above ministry, I don't know if there's above ministry. Sometimes you have denominational failure as well, where things came from way up and it filters down. So failure, maybe let's just describe what you think failure is. Is failure different than sinning? Or is, can you interchange that? Can you, is failure more of a lesser problem, or how are we going to navigate through what failure is?
Well, sin is absolutely a failure.
Okay.
But no, we can fail to have our expectations met, and that can be something that we need to work through towards survival.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can have circumstantial things that just go really wrong.
Yeah. So we can have failure at all different levels.
Yeah.
Okay. So a couple of things I thought of, you know, you can take, if you're driving somewhere, you can take a wrong turn and it's a failure on your part of not navigating properly. And it's a super simple solution. Turn around, drive back to the highway, go back and find the right road. You can be driving in the city. You can hit a light post and dent your fender, or you can bump into somebody, maybe lightly rear end someone at a traffic light. That's a failure as well. Maybe a little bit more expensive. Or you can have a head-on collision, cross the line, have a head-on collision, somebody dies. That's a catastrophic failure. You know, so you have kind of these three levels. So let's just think a little bit about how we can fail. So in what ways? Maybe I'll just read the list I have here. You can fail in planning. If you're in charge of something, if you're a school board member, if you're a parent, if you're just a single person involved in something and you fail to plan, that's a failure. And it can cause issues, again, at different levels. You can fail in caring. You can fail in caring for people. You can fail in being trustworthy. You can fail in communication. You can fail in disciplinary measures. So for your children, say, or whoever you're responsible for, you can just fail to do the right thing. You can fail in humility. Is there any others you can think of? How can we fail? We're kind of on the negative side of this subject here, so.
Well, my opinion would be, you know, coming from an administrative standpoint, the biggest failure that I see and that I've experienced is the inability to read people properly.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, you know, I guess the only way to really to fine-tune that skill is to fail at it.
Isn't that true?
So that's kind of been my experience.
Okay. So failing to read people, and that part of that is communication, failing in communication, failing in understanding what someone means.
Or making a rational decision.
Yeah.
Don't ever do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Or do it. Maybe you need to learn it.
Hmm. So you think it's okay? This is a big discussion. Sometimes, you know, as a young Christian, when I failed a lot, I thought, well, maybe the only way to really realize the love and grace of God is by failure in my life. And I thought, that can't be right.
Well, personal failures, I think, are easier to recover from
mm-hmm.
than professional ones.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into a school setting with teachers and students.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my opinion.
That involves more people.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a fun thing if you drop a brick on your own toe, but if you drop a brick on many people's toe,
mm-hmm.
it's a little different.
Okay. So I think that's very true. Sometimes personal failures do overflow into public failures. That can obviously happen. maybe let's just move on here. I just want to talk a little bit about how failure can escalate. So kind of springing off from that thought, if you fail to realize that your front tire is low on your vehicle, almost flat, and you take off and you hit the interstate and you're driving 75 miles an hour for 20 minutes and that tire blows, that personal failure of not checking your tire can escalate into a blowout, a loss of control, causing your vehicle to roll which could lead to death easily. If we think about school, a school board chairman's lack of planning and just being a lackadaisical person who doesn't hardly think about the meeting before he gets to school, you could say, well, that's just a small thing, but that can lead to his fellow board members being frustrated, the teacher being frustrated, annoyed. Parents will get frustrated because the school board isn't doing what it should be. The school culture starts to deteriorate. Vision of a good Christian education doesn't get passed on. Suddenly you have this snowball effect. And then maybe 10 years from now, you're wondering, why have we just been struggling to have a good school for 10 years? Well, maybe it started with a poor chairman or a chairman that made some bad decisions or didn't care enough. You know, that's just an escalation of some failure. And you know, the scary thing is, it's sometimes hard to tell when a leader is failing. Is this just his personality? Or is this just his leadership style? Or is this actually failure? And who's going to tell him to shape up? Who can say what the future holds if you continue to act this way? It's a challenge. And one that I don't have really a good answer for. Maybe there's some more thoughts on that. So let's move on to the part, what looks like failure may be success in other areas. So I thought of Jesus in this. You know, if you didn't know anything about the greater picture, the bigger picture of Jesus Christ and all that he is, and you just simply heard the story of his life, you would say that's pretty much a failure. There's not really much that happened that was very good besides, you know, maybe his miracles or whatever. But, you know, well, I'll just go over. So he was born to a poor carpenter's wife under a cloud of suspicion of being an illegitimate child. He had the opportunity to be the king and conquer the Romans, but instead he submitted to a mock trial and he was beaten and crucified in the prime of his life. So it just seems like failure. But when you understand and you see the bigger picture, suddenly that whole purpose becomes clear and the failure itself becomes a success. You know, his very being born to that lowly carpenter, living a poorer life, that in itself and facing temptations made him to be our intercessor. He now understands our feelings, and what an amazing success that story is for us today. So we talked earlier about children failing in school. Now I want to talk a little bit about that because there's, I think probably from the world's perspective and from our perspective, there could be some differences of opinion on whether it's okay for a child to get failing grades or not. How do you respond to that when a child has failing grades? So how can success for a child come out of a difficult academic school life? Is there some ways that a child could actually gain from that? Maybe something you remember or you know people or...
That's probably a hard one to answer. For me, anyway.
I was thinking that sometimes the children that aren't challenged academically and can get good grades as easy as they can roll off a log, they can come through school and we feel good about it, but they might not be as prepared for life itself as someone who worked hard and still had rough sailing. I can think of some students like that in my years of teaching that now when they're 35 years old, 40 years old, they're proving themselves to be better adjusted to life than the ones that had it all easy.
Okay. So there you go. You can kind of check your measure of success. What is actually success? Was it just getting that good grade that day, or was it learning, patience, perseverance? By redoing their work because they got a bad grade. It's not just so you can write a better grade in the report card, but it's actually so that they learn perseverance and getting it done right the second time or third time if they have to.
Sometimes I think the people with the higher the IQ, the more subject the person is to frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know how it should be. And they have a refined understanding of where they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
What right looks like. And I don't see... Yeah, I think you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I remember sitting around in a school board meeting discussing a student that just seemed like she couldn't focus, and it was just challenging. The teacher was pretty frustrated as to, you know, how much do I push her? How much, what can we do with this? And I just remember some of the other wise board members saying that, you know, this isn't actually the most important factor in this situation. You know, the father knew this child had strengths in other areas. Say was really good at baking cookies or whatever, and could see that academics weren't necessarily going to be this child's strong point now or in her own adult life, but as that child grew up and they continued to help her with the things she could do well, suddenly there's, and today that child is out of school and or nearing the end of school and has many good character traits. And I think as Christian schools, that can be more of our focus than just academic excellence.
So I had a set of twin boys in school, 7th and 8th grade. One of them was smart, one was
mm-hmm.
not so smart. And so then I was told by one of their, they would work on a dairy farm, and I was told by one of their bosses that he thinks the one that works a lot harder in school will make more of himself. So that's yet to be seen, but I enjoy watching that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. It's always interesting to see where that goes.
So, Jeremy, how do we relate to that practically? And if you're going to get to that point, I don't want to jump ahead, but you know, what do you do with a child that just struggles and struggles and struggles
mm-hmm.
and really can't succeed academically? I mean, how should we think about those failing grades?
Mm-hmm.
Do we just always refuse to advance a child, or do we always need a remedy for that, or how do we deal with the someone who just struggles and struggles?
That's a good question. And that is one thing we've wrestled with in this situation.
Academic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked about some of that stuff in our meetings. And I mean, what we came down to is the grades don't have to be that great. We almost don't want to fail the child because that's not really what Christian school is about. Christian school is about making, you know, servants for the kingdom.
There's got to be consequences for your decisions.
For sure. Well,
there'll be a dose of reality later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be nice.
Especially if it's laziness or
yes.
if there's baser, whatever,
mm-hmm.
lack of character that's causing those grades. But there are just some folks who just aren't going to make the grade academically.
So I think that's a good point.
It's almost, you know, that decision has to be made per child basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to look at the child. There's a lot of variations in play at that.
Mm-hmm.
Their parents, outside influence, their teachers,
mm-hmm.
crowds that, you know, those students hang out with. All of that needs to be taken into consideration.
That's right. That's absolutely critical. Because you can't make a blanket statement and say, okay, this is how we're going to deal with every situation. It can't be done. You have to know why the child is academically struggling. If
and
the rest
some just struggling. It's just the way it is. So.
That's right.
And you have to be able, you as an administrator or as a teacher, like I said, you have to be able to read that and identify that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that ability or that experience, you can fail, and in a sense, that child will fail because of your lack of ability.
That's right. Okay, very good. I think that's true. Anything else you want to talk about regarding that? So, situational, on a situational basis, that's how that has to be looked at. I think that's where we've come to.
It's not wrong to be, as it were, haunted by those choices. I know that I read in a book one time that it said it's very difficult for people in education to actually go on vacation because they sit at the beach to think about what should have we done more for, or what could have we done more for. Those things do haunt us, that somehow we want to, I guess, learn a little bit better how to relate to those things.
I think that is part of the administrator's struggle is the hindsight. Okay, let's just look a little bit at leadership failure and success. So just for a minute or two, when a leader fails, there seems to be a lot more consequences than when, say, just a single young man fails or you know, someone that doesn't affect as many people. When there's a man up front who is people trusted and he failed, there is a lot of things that happen and in a lot of people's minds and hearts. And you can see that in David's personal life. You know, he failed with Bathsheba. David was a man after God's own heart. He was a friend of God. And he wrote so many psalms of praise and worship, and he went through many tough times where God was his helper. What's interesting, it seemed to go on for a year before Nathan finally came to him and said, "This is what you've done." And the reason that David did not catastrophically fail at that point is because he turned his heart to God and he just confessed his sin. There was no hold back. He wrote Psalm 51 with, and I think he gave that psalm to his musician. That's what it says at the top of Psalm 51. And he just wanted everyone to know, "I have sinned. This is my problem. I've sinned against God." What an amazing story of confession. And I think it really shows how failure can be overcome. David failed again when he got a notion that he wanted to number Israel. Now, I don't really know the whole, it's hard to understand exactly what the basis is for that. Joab tried to stop him and say, no, don't do it. It's not right. But David, for some reason, just said, "No, I want to do this." God came to him afterward and said, "What you did is wrong. And you have three choices." I can't remember what those three choices are, but what happened is 70,000 men died because of David's failure that day. And David was so overwhelmed, he went and he bought a field and he killed some cows and he offered them to God as a sacrifice. And the angel of death stopped because of that. Again, he survived his failures because of his true heart, in spite of his failings, repentance and honesty. If you look at Saul, by contrast, when he was anointed king, he was a good man, but for some reason, you can watch as you read through his life, one by one, those choices that he made started taking him down, and his life became about his own success and about making monuments for himself, and then it turned into not doing God's commands fully and making excuses. And even though he said the same words as David, "I have sinned," it didn't go over well with God. He finally ended with suicide on the battlefield. And I think if you read through that story, you begin to understand why. It was just this slow failing process that he did not that did not turn around. And there's many other stories in the Bible about the effects of failure as well. Some were good endings and some were not. Okay, I just want to talk a little bit about the 737 aircraft. And I don't know if you remember this. just going to do a little bit of drawing on the board for this one. So this was back in 2000, and I believe it was 2019, where two 737s, 6 months apart, nosedived into the ground and crashed. And I'm just going to draw this plane real quickly here. So here's the wing. Here's the engine, and here's the tail. Now, up here in the front, there's a little sensor, and this sensor tells the computer in here what this plane is doing, whether the nose is going up or whether it's going down. Back here, this part of the aircraft, it's called the horizontal stabilizer, and it can move, this whole back part can actually move up and down. It has a little track system like this. When the pilot pulls back, the elevator in the back moves up or down. This design of plane has been around for many, many years. They started with quite small engines. As the engines got larger, they had to redesign the plane because of all that power, the extra big engines, or they just put in a computer system that helped the pilot fly the plane. What that computer system did is it actually would move this back part here. I'm just going to draw this. So here's the tail again. And this is what can happen. So this is on a track. So now when this sensor says, oh, the nose of the plane is going up, it actually automatically lifts this. Helps the pilot with the control. Well, one day the sensor was telling it the wrong information. It said, oh, the nose is lifting too high, and it began to pull this up and push the nose down. And no matter what the pilot did back here with this little elevator, he can control the plane and it nosedived. So this started way back before before the event actually happened. Boeing had sort of covered over this whole program meant to control this plane. They said, oh, it's just a really simple program. It won't affect how the pilots fly, so they don't even need to know about it. What they didn't realize was only one sensor was feeding this information. When this one sensor gave the wrong information, suddenly this thing could run away with the plane and completely take over. So the FAA in the States here has sort of okayed it. But when these planes started to crash, suddenly big question marks came up. And Boeing said, oh, well, if the pilots had been trained properly, this wouldn't have happened. They could have escaped this. There was court hearings. Finally, Boeing said, oh, we'll do an update for this computer real quick, and hopefully that'll help things out. Both of these crashes were from Indonesia and from Ethiopia. So they said, oh, these fellas they're from overseas. If they'd have been U.S. pilots, they would have survived. They would have figured it out. The CEO of Boeing defended Boeing's culture and safety program and said, oh, we have a good safety program. This can't be our fault. And he said he didn't know anything about, you know, trying to cover this up. But finally, that CEO actually had to resign because things were looking so bad for them. And a new CEO was installed. And this is when things finally started to change. They started to commit to safety and transparency instead of trying to cover this up. finally, so this became extremely expensive for Boeing. They finally settled to pay $2.5 billion after being charged with fraud, and they paid a criminal penalty of $243 million, and they eventually paid $1.7 billion in damages to customers and $500 million to crash victim beneficiaries. So a simple little problem that if it would have been written in their book, if they would have trained pilots, would have completely eliminated the problem. Now, you probably remember these 737s sat for about a year and a half, grounded. Nothing could move because they weren't sure what the issue was. And that repercussion, the repercussions of that are still going on today. Now, of course, there is a lot of 737s flying around and they're doing fine. And everyone seems to have gained their trust back. But it was huge, huge, huge issues for them. So you may think, well, this is outside of my scope. This is outside of my experience, but I think we can learn from it. Let's just talk a little bit about what our initial responses are to failure. I was thinking about this. You know, I do ceramic tile work, and I create custom showers, and then when I'm all done, I leave, and it's supposed to not leak. Well, if that shower leaks in the basement, there's going to be water dripping, and there's going to be drywall ruined, and there's going to be furniture ruined, and I sometimes have fear about that happening. You know, so let's just talk. If you suddenly realize that you are responsible for a huge problem, what are a few negative responses that initially come to your mind?
Can't be my fault.
Can't be my fault.
Yeah, I mean, it's that attitude.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what little way Bowden started out there.
Yeah, that's right.
When I'll bet there were people within the organization that jolly well...
Oh, they knew it.
Yeah.
But cover it up. So
cover it up. That's a great way to state. Yeah.
We could say denial, right?
Yeah.
What's another one?
Blame.
I think I said the first one or another one before. I said fear. Fear can be huge. You know, when you get that phone call and you hear those first words, you go, oh, and it's just, okay, how is this going to go? What will happen? Any other ideas of what some of the initial...
Just running from it. I knew of a situation where it was an engineer that had done engineered crane set, and they were going to lift a tank out of the building and forgot to figure out whether the tank had anything in it or not. So he way under-engineered the whole thing. They were lifting it out, and the crane fell over and smashed through several buildings in the city, and,
mm-hmm.
and he fled.
He just ran. Yeah. So another one I thought of, you could just simply be frustrated. I've had this feeling when I realize that I am to blame for this, and I am so frustrated with myself that I didn't understand what would happen, or I missed something, or whatever. The frustration. Another one that you could say is seeking a quick fix. So that's one thing that Boeing did as well. They said, we're just going to quickly do a computer update, and that should solve everything. It didn't solve nearly everything. And sometimes we're that way too.
So how do you overcome all of that? How do you overcome your fear?
So are these natural, like, is this natural
response? Those are natural reactions, yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. So they need to be overcome.
So how do you do that? How do you go to the next shower job?
Especially, I agree, especially after it happened, you know. If suddenly, you know, I just came, I actually had this happen where I did this tile backsplash, and afterward I realized that there was two different colors of tile. There, just faintly. But there was no way that I could leave that on the wall, because I knew someone was going to come on there and say, what? I can see there's a difference. So I ended up tearing about half or three quarter of it off, and it was a mess. And in the middle of it, I tore it off and fixed it. The drywall was coming off, and it was in this beautiful new kitchen. And I put on new tiles that were right.
So there's part of nature owning the mistake. Mm-hmm. I mean, finally, it was Jeremy that put the tile up.
Yeah.
Finally, it was John F. Kennedy that initiated the Bay of Pigs incident. And like, he went in front of the nation and said, my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Why that was surviving failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so not pushing the blame off on someone else.
Yeah. So maybe what let's do, I have a little list of things that we can do that will help us when we realize that this is how we're responding, or when we realize we're failing. Maybe the first thing we should always do is pray. Have you ever had the experience where you feel overwhelmed with what just happened or with your failure? You commit it to God and you think about it for a while, and then you have a new outlook. Maybe you have a testimony of that. Everybody deals with failure, so I mean, everyone can probably say that this has happened to them.
Maybe it's old man syndrome, but the older I get and the more that I have difficulty going to sleep when I should be sleeping, I found prayer to be the answer to that many times. It's that worry, that fear that's just stressing me out.
Mm-hmm.
Just telling God, it's yours. You know, right now, you remember my frame, it's dust.
Mm-hmm.
I need rest right now. It's in your hands.
Especially when sometimes, you know, we realize failure when it's long past, but there's still repercussions of it happening in somebody's life, and we can't do anything about it. You know, that can be a tough one to deal with. And I think prayer can really help with that as well. Because what are you going to do? Maybe you've already confessed it. Maybe you've already tried to make it right. Still issues. Those things can happen. That's some tough things. Okay, so we've already talked a little bit about facing the issue. Deal with it. You know, this is my fault. Instead of running away from it, don't ignore it. Are we almost out of time already?
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about time. 2:04, and it's supposed to end at
2:05.
2:05. You can use some of my break time. I'm just getting to the really good stuff.
I know, it's difficult. I'm just going to write down what I have here for a few of these, and then maybe we can end on that. So seek to understand the situation. Often in a situation where there's failure, there's a lot of smoke. Maybe if it's a really complicated situation, hard to know what the facts are, hard to sort out my emotions. If it's somebody else's failure, how are you going to talk to them? Sometimes it's good to boil it right down, see what actually happened. Don't let embarrassment guide you. That's probably a wrong spelling. A-S-S. Or fear of man. That happened, I think, with Boeing as well. Very fearful of what people would say and how this would go. And finally, at two more here. Seek to build broken trust. And commit to better actions. Seek to build broken trust and commit to better actions in the future. Maybe if you're a chairman of a school, of a board, you realize that you haven't been a good chairman, or there's been things that are lacking in your school. It's time to buckle down and get to work. Sometimes it's maybe you can, if you're too busy in your work and it's taking away from your school board responsibilities, sometimes work can just suffer a bit. Because what's important? Maybe if you're a parent, parents often cause failure in a situation by maybe protecting their child too much or having the wrong vision of what they want for their child. We heard some of that already today. Would you rather your child had everything perfect in school today, or is your vision for what your child will be when it gets to grade 10? A parent can change some of those. If you're a board member, you can just help a little bit more, be more available, visit school more. We heard some of those things as well. Okay, I think it's almost time to close. Let's just have an attitude of humility and service all the time. You asked the question, how do we overcome some of those negative things? I think it's by prayer and a positive attitude and committing to not reacting. A lot of those things that I had written down there were reactions, thoughtless reactions, things that come naturally to us. But instead, let's prayerfully take the steps that need to be taken to make the situation right. And God will bless it. Thank you for your participation.